Hello and welcome to Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. I'm James Holloway and I'm reading my way through the Deities and Demigods supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. And as I do, I'm talking about the gods, heroes, and mythological beings that I find in them, and how to use them and religion and mythology more generally in your fantasy role-playing games. As you can hear, I've lost my voice, but on the other hand, a promising career in YouTube ASMR videos beckons, although I gather there's some monetization problems. In this episode, we're going to be taking a look at probably just two more deities. I know I promised three, but there's just so much to say about these first two, and my voice is so shredded that I think it's probably going to wind up just being Guan Yin and Lei Gong, but believe me, there's plenty to say about both of them. So let's get started. First up, we have Guan Yin, who is described here as the goddess of mercy and childbearing. Guan Yin is a very interesting deity, and she's a very important one in Chinese religion. She begins as a Buddhist figure, and indeed, a figure who is typically represented as male. Guan Yin is a form, or originally a form or expression, or just another way of perceiving the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara. Originally, Avalokiteshvara is a Buddhist figure typically represented as male. But during the Middle Ages, in China, Avalokiteshvara begins to be represented in a female form. And, canonically, Avalokiteshvara can take any form, takes any form that is necessary to relieve suffering. Avalokiteshvara is the one who hears the sounds of the world, that is to say, the Bodhisattva who hears the cries of suffering beings and comes to their aid. And Guan Yin comes from a term that is a translation. Like most Chinese deities, Guan Yin has other names and is often referred to as Guan Xiyin, which I think is that more literal translation of Avalokiteshvara. I know I've mentioned in the past as sources, the Oxford Dictionary of World Religions and this thing called Chinese Religion and Introduction. Most of these deities aren't really mentioned in these sources. Guan Di gets a look in, and I probably should have mentioned him at the time, but finally, the Oxford Dictionary of World Religions, because I guess Chinese traditional religion isn't a world religion. A world religion is defined as one that kind of like crosses cultural boundaries, like Christianity or Islam or Buddhism, but not like, say, Sikhism. So it talks a little bit about Guan Yin under the general heading of Avalokiteshvara, and it says that the name Avalokiteshvara actually means the Lord who looks in every direction, and that was rendered in Chinese as what I said, he who hears the sound of the world. That's back when Guan Yin was male. There's a spiritual goal associated with Guan Yin, which is that Guan Yin's purpose is not just to be compassionate and help people overcome their troubles, but also to help people become more compassionate, right? You're meant to achieve the compassion of Guan Yin yourself. If you were enlightened, you would have that level of divine compassion. And Thompson's Chinese Religion says about her, no doubt the most popular deity in all of China. Originally, Guan Yin or Guan Xiyin was a bodhisattva called Avalokiteshvara, one of the avatars of the Buddha Amitabha, etc., etc. And she says she's often referred to as a Buddha ancestor. But she's a compassionate mother figure, the embodiment of loving kindness, the giver of children to childless wives, and the source of help in time of need. So you can see how that'd be a pretty popular deity. It's also yet another kind of friend of the common people deity, right? Like, we haven't had too many of these aristocratic types, even ones who were sort of noble characters in life that were picked for this book anyway, have a kind of earthy aspect to them. And definitely, Guan Yin is someone that you would pray to for help with the problems of everyday life. But Guan Yin is held in high esteem, not just by Buddhists in China, but within the broader, quote-unquote, traditional Chinese religion. There's also an emphasis in some versions on Guan Yin as a savior, that it's not just that Guan Yin is going to, help you with your immediate problem, that the really helpful, the really caring thing that Guan Yin will do is try to break you out of samsara, out of the cycle of reincarnation, and help you achieve enlightenment, which, after all, is the most compassionate thing that you could do for someone, right? Now, we might be asking ourselves, okay, a goddess who is a spiritual savior and, you know, prayed to for all the usual kind of like help in trouble and compassion and so on. But how does this fit in with a typically more action-oriented Dungeons & Dragons game? And I think Guanyin fills that role in two ways. I mean, first, action religion is the very nature of the great Chinese literary classic, The Journey to the West, perhaps best known to British audiences, at least, through its adaptation in the Japanese TV series Monkey. And in The Journey to the West, Guanyin turns up a fair bit, either delivering important pieces of a Buddhist advice, or actually just helping Monkey out with, you know, the demons and other challenges that he faces. From a player character perspective, and, I mean, I think the characters of, like, in principle, I think the characters of Journey to the West make excellent player character party. I think once you actually read it, it's not maybe an amazing model for adventures, although there are a lot of things you can take out from it. Anyway, for a typical Dungeons & Dragons game, I think Guanyin requires really no modification, because she is a, you know, nurturing, healing goddess who specifically hears cries of distress. And she's sometimes depicted with 11 heads, and that is because she was trying so hard to hear all the sounds of suffering and whatever from the world below that her head broke into pieces, and Amida Buddha gave her these 11 heads so that she'd be better at hearing all of the different cries for help coming from mortals. And then she tried to reach out and help those people, only to find out that her two arms weren't enough. And so she was given a bunch of extra arms as well. She's often represented with, you know, with 100 arms or with a seemingly infinite number of arms to represent this. So we might think of the clerics of Guanyin as her arms, right? That this is this idea that Guanyin's mission is to go out and ease the suffering of mortal creatures. So that's very much your typical kind of healer cleric, maybe a little bit more toward the pacifist side, and that is would be consistent with Buddhist teachings, right? And that's reflected in the way that Guanyin appears in the Deities and Demigods book. So for example, we're told that no act of violence can be directed towards her by any being in the universe. She has the powers of a 20th level magic user, so she will never use her spells to cause harm. And again, it says that her clerics are pacifists. Now, interestingly, Guanyin is sometimes accompanied by figures like, you know, she has sort of attendants. Sometimes those are some little kids, and sometimes they're warriors, one of whom is Guan Di, who presumably does not share her scruples about causing harm. So we can probably get away with clerics bashing things with maces, but I think it's certainly true that if you want to play like a full-bore healer cleric who, you know, is more interested in what they can do to help people than to, like, go in and crack skulls with a mace, or maybe we make a special exception for demons and undead kind of thing, I think Guanyin is the deity for you. And the nice thing is that the mythology of Guanyin is so rich and robust. There are so many great stories about Guanyin in her various incarnations, you know, that come from Buddhist traditions. And, you know, I'm only talking about China, but of course, Guanyin in many forms appears all over Asia, right? Because in coming out of that Buddhist tradition, you know, she's found in Southeast Asia, she's found in Korea, she's found in Japan. So there are just tons of myths and legends about Guanyin, usually in her role as a savior or protector, right? Responding to people who are in distress. And so among these people in distress are two groups that don't immediately seem to have anything in common, but that just, again, this shows the universal nature of Guanyin's care and compassion. And the first is that she is, as the Deities and Demigods book says, a goddess of childbirth. So people who have not had a child but want to will, you know, pray to Guanyin to give them fertility. And, you know, she's associated with mothers and with children. Again, this idea that she's a, you know, a universal figure of peaceful benevolence. She's also a patron deity of sailors, which I think is really interesting, right? That the sailors aren't, I mean, maybe they're out there praying to some kind of sea god or to the dragon kings who rule the wind and the waves, but also, you know, they're praying to Guanyin, same Guanyin as everybody else does. Yeah, there are stories about Guanyin, you know, saving sailors from shipwrecks. And if you just, like, type, I don't know, Guanyin mythology into Google, or just go and look at the Wikipedia page for Guanyin, you'll just see all these different tales of Guanyin rescuing people. One thing that I think is a little odd is that the Deities and Demigods book very specifically describes Guanyin as being dressed in green, whereas modern images of Guanyin, and I wonder if that's maybe an older Buddhist thing, just looking at some of these Buddhist images, I do see that she sometimes has like a green top or a green tunic. But I would say that she's more typically depicted dressed in white. So I don't know what that's all about. And because I'm a giant nerd, I sort of went, my mind went to Glorantha, as it so often does. And in Glorantha, the goddess of healing, Chelana Arroy, is similarly a strictly pacifist deity, and Chelana Arroy healers are sometimes not brought along to the battlefield because of their habit of healing the wounded of the other side as well, because they're suffering creatures and they need healing. And while that sounds frustrating, I think it points out, and, you know, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me to hear that the late Greg Stafford, to some extent, modeled Chelana Arroy on Guan Yin, that Guan Yin pervades unconditional love, that she shows compassion and mercy toward creatures because they exist, and by existing, they deserve that compassion and mercy. So I think it could be in some ways challenging to play that cleric again in the typically more action-oriented D&D game, but it could be a source of, you know, really fun moral conflicts, as long as they were not portrayed as the pacifist character being a useless slacker who drags down the party's attempt to clear out the dungeon or whatever, right? But you can definitely ask yourself the question, like, what crisis would be so bad that it would require this cleric of Guan Yin to, like, I don't know, you know, like, blow the years of dust off of this locker and get out there like rusty old weapons and armor from when they were a soldier before they found Buddha and committed themselves to a life of nonviolence. Like, well, I have sworn never to harm another living being, but at the same time, this evil cannot go unchecked. You know, Guan Yin hears the cries of suffering creatures, and this is really getting out of hand. So, you know, me and my Mesa Disruption are going to go down there and put a stop to this, regardless of the tenets of nonviolence. It's actually a pretty good origin story for a cleric of Guan Yin. And sort of still having the effect of, like, listen, Buster, if I'm offending against the goddess, then, you know, how am I still able to smite you? Alternatively, in a lot of versions of Dungeons & Dragons, you can build a cleric who is just a really, really capable healer and not much in the way of a fighter, and that would be a pretty good cleric of Guan Yin. So Guan Yin is a great deity to include in your pantheon, or, you know, a kind of reskinned Guan Yin like Chelana Arroy, because on the one hand, you know, she has that frustrating quality of being very, very committed to a noble but difficult to observe moral principle. And on the other hand, you know, she does so in a way that has an obvious benefit, in a way that most, like, religious extremist characters are just pains in the butt and don't bring anything else to the table. But if you're like, this person is a great healer and we all owe her our lives, boy, we find her pacifism frustrating sometimes, but at the same time, we're kind of moved by her moral position. I mean, I think that's something that's maybe more likely to be the case in Chinese literature than in a typical D&D party, but you never know. So Guan Yin is the first of two deities in this episode, and she requires basically no work. You can just drop her right into a D&D game. She prompts adventure. You can see how characters who worship her are motivated to go do stuff, right? Answer the call of people in distress, no matter who they are. I mean, that's just perfect. So she is D&D-able right out of the gate. And the same is true for our next deity. I'm talking about Lei Gong. Lei Gong is the Lord of Thunder, and indeed, again, thanks to Tom McGrenery for this translation, Lei Gong, that's just what it means. So Lei means thunder, and Gong, we've seen in a couple of other deity names, it means something like Lord. It's often translated as Duke, you know, but that's an imprecise translation, you know, Lord or Prince or something like that. So we'll call him the Lord of Thunder. Most people are probably familiar with the name Lei Gong through the character Lei Gong the Thunderer, who appears in the Marvel comic Iron Fist, is a very minor character. Sort of appears in the flashbacks in the Iron Fist Netflix series. And there he's just a stern old warrior and martial arts master who, you know, maybe is not so great as he's cracked up to be in later incarnations. But that, it just, I think the name was just chosen because it sounds real tough, you know, Lei Gong the Thunderer. So Lei Gong is the god of thunder, and, you know, in one sense, he's a god of natural phenomena. He's grouped together with a bunch of other nature gods, including a couple that we've already talked about, Chisongzi, alias Yushi, and Fangpopo. they are sometimes seen as his servants. So he makes the thunder, Yusha makes the rain by stirring a big pot, and of course Fang Popo has her leather bag full of wind. So, you know, wind, rain, and thunder, they all go together. Hey, wait a minute, are those the names of the three storms from Big Trouble in Little China? And they're called rain, lightning, and thunder, maybe, actually. I'm not sure. But in addition to his responsibility of making thunder, Lei Gong has another one. He punishes evildoers. All right, easy peasy. He's a great paladin god. He has the responsibility to punish people. It seems in particular that he is responsible, like, as part of his general responsibility for punishing people who hurt others. There are some stories that indicate that he's a special thing for punishing people who use sorcery to hurt others. So, you know, he's not just a kind of vigilante character, but also you could argue there's some interpretations of him that are sort of, he's a witch hunter. And furthermore, he's got an amazing look. Now, the description of him in the Deities and Demigods book, it says, he appears as a man with smoking black skin and eyes with pupils like lightning bolts. He has two large tusks and a huge nose. That is sort of true. He actually almost more has a beak. Now, he's kind of got some bird-like qualities. But whatever specifics you want to give him, Lei Gong is often depicted with a monstrous, frightening appearance. But he's maybe not as, like, he's described as lawful evil here, which I'm not sure is really the case. He might be lawful neutral. You know, he punishes people who break the rules. Maybe those rules aren't perfect. I don't know. But he's usually seen as a positive figure in Chinese mythology. He's not any kind of demon or bad guy. I think in general, there is a sense that he's an agent of justice. He punishes people who've committed crimes. On the other hand, I have read that sometimes he's invoked as an agent of revenge. I think most people who want to take revenge do think of themselves as being justified. Oh, I mentioned Yushu, the Rainmaster, and Feng Popo, Lady Wind, but he's married, of course, to the goddess of lightning, which makes sense, right? Thunder and lightning are married. That's very, like, cosmologically neat. So if you look at Lei Gong, he's often depicted with a fierce, frightening appearance. He rides around in a chariot, which is pretty cool, and his charioteer is another sort of recurring character. He fights both evil spirits and evil mortals, and he wields a mighty thunder hammer or sometimes a mace, and sometimes he's also depicted with a chisel. I'm looking right now at an image of a statue of him where he's wielding a hammer and a chisel. And it is said that he uses his chisel to punish evildoers. And I'm not quite sure what he's going to do with the chisel to punish evildoers, but no aspect of it sounds good. Like, it's very hard to imagine a punishment that Lei Gong could inflict on evildoers using a hammer and a chisel. That isn't real terrible. Anyway, most episodes of the Chinese Mythos section, we get a great paladin, right? We had the gold-armored, splendid paladin of the God of Wealth. We had old stern eyebrows, McRed face paladins of Guan Di, standing for, military virtues of comradeship and uprightness. And a paladin of Lei Gong would be fantastic as well, right? Some thunder-wielding avenger seeking out all those who've done wrong and committed secret crimes and blasting them with lightning bolts or thumping them with a great big mallet. It's just paladin city around here. I approve wholeheartedly. I like a good paladin. The sort of medieval European model of the paladin in Dungeons & Dragons is really hard to square with the life of an adventurer, right? Because ultimately it's based on this aesthetic model that is very Christian and that raises just all kinds of challenges about the paladin's day-to-day activities, right? And maybe not so much with a paladin of Lei Gong, who just kind of go out there and lamp people with a mallet or go after them with a chisel for having done bad things. 5th edition handles that paladin actually pretty well. One of the paladin oaths, which is sort of punish the guilty oath rather than the protect the innocent one, I think would fit a paladin of Lei Gong quite nicely. Anyway, that about does it for these two deities. In our next episode, we're going to take a look at one of the gods of disease, one of the most misrepresented gods in this book, and another misrepresented but pretty fun god who would make an excellent god for adventurers. So please join me next time on Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. Thank you for listening, and thank you very much for supporting Monster Man on Patreon.